What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Sunday, April 7th, 2024, and this week's episode, UFC 300, The One. We'll talk about this past Saturday's UFC Vegas 90 event and the middleweights in action between Brendan Allen and Chris Curtis. We'll talk about the latest in MMA news. The UFC's next fight night has a bit of a change-up, and we will talk about the thing that we have all been waiting for, UFC 300, Pereira, Hill, and 14 bangers of a card. My name is Gabriel Gonzalez, and I'm here with my co-host, Natalie Zamudio.
Double G, double G. I mean, this is a heck of a card coming up. We've talked a little bit about it. But before UFC 300, I do have a question for you. Yes. Related, not at all to MMA, but related to basketball. Were you tracking the women's NCAA at all? Were you watching Caitlin Clark?
Hey, look, I love me some Caitlin Clark. I'm not going to lie. I've been busy. I have a lot of prep. I've also been really into the WWE stuff with WrestleMania. I haven't been keeping up with March Madness. For the, mind you, not just the women, the men too. It just usually does not hit my radar, but I know their story. I'm very proud of all of them, but yeah, I can't tell you I was riveted by, or not riveted, but that I was glued to the television during March Madness. Okay. It's just me.
Well, you didn't miss much, believe it or not. You know, Caitlin Clark, if you own a YouTube profile, you would have seen her popping up everywhere on Instagram and whatnot. I was not following women's college basketball, believe it or not, up until last Friday. So I did tune in, like I think most everyone did, out of curiosity. And it was interesting to see. It was fun to be part of the cultural phenomenon. I don't think we saw the best Caitlin Clark on Friday or today. However, she's definitely a special talent, and it was a bummer that she couldn't win, but, you know, she did have a couple of moments there, but it wasn't like a full-on highlight reel show. They were playing against a tough team. South Carolina was supremely tough and supremely tall. Their center is 6'7" from Brazil. She might have had another career in MMA. She chose basketball.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that's taller than John Jones.
Dude, unbelievable. How often do you hear about a 6'7" woman?
I mean, shoot.
Brazil makes them in all shapes and sizes. They've got an amazing genetic
pool. I'm surprised there's not a soccer team that has her in goalie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, man. She was just Dikembe Mutomboing everybody out there.
You know what? You go, girl.
Yeah, that's awesome. Anyway, back to you.
Let's get to some UFC. I know we're excited to talk about it. We all are. UFC Vegas 90, Saturday night. Chris Curtis taking on Brendan Allen. A rematch. Curtis won the first one. I'm not going to lie. I don't know that I had a five-rounder wire-to-wire on my bingo card, but that's exactly what we got. Very competitive. I actually also thought great pacing, all things considered. Chris Curtis had, I think, a little under a month, and it might have even been just right in that neighborhood. Obviously, Brendan Allen was preparing for top contender in Marvin Vettori. I thought that Brendan, one, showed a lot of great growth in his game. I thought he had great shot selection. I actually think the physicality and just that prowess with the hands in his boxing of Chris Curtis really bailed him out of that fight. I thought that Brendan, particularly with his use of the kicks, was doing really well. Obviously got on the ground, took Curtis back a few times in that fight, but round one and two, I had Brendan. Round three onward, this started feeling touch and go. Chris Curtis is getting fist to face. Brendan Allen isn't really going away. They're both still throwing down. They're both still getting their shots in. A little more variety still from Brendan, but Chris, once again, right there with him. Obviously some great moments. You had I hate it after the Chris Weidman thing. A little bit with the fouls, you know. Allen has one, Curtis had one, and then obviously Curtis had some kind of issue late in the fight. I thought it was a very competitive fight. I know a lot of people weren't exactly raving about the whole card online, and I get it. 300's right around the corner. There's March Madness, as Natalie pointed out. There's pro wrestling. There's a lot of stuff going on that it's like, I get it. You know, baseball's back. People weren't focused on it. It was a great scrap at the end of the night. So I get why people scored it for Curtis. I also get the Allen card. It was just a close fight. What about you?
It was a close fight, and I thought Chris Curtis looked great. You know, not super short notice, but short enough, and that always gets you points with the UFC. And when you perform the way he did, that's going to get you some extra points. So I think this is going to be, you know, the right decision for him. All up, you know, until you consider that at the very, very, very end, he pulled his hamstring. But, you know, I don't think short notice had anything to do with that. So I thought Curtis looked great. Brendan, too. They were going back and forth. It was exciting. I did have Chris Curtis winning up until the very end when Brendan Allen took him down, took his back. You know, they stood up, and then Brendan Allen just started teeing off on him. The fight finishes. Chris Curtis drops to his butt and starts holding his leg, and you realize that he was injured. So, you know, if not for that takedown, which I think caused the injury, I would have comfortably given this to Chris Curtis. But Brendan Allen looked great too, and again, without that injury, Chris Curtis for me. But the way the fight finished, the way that round finished, it did for me change the direction of the decision to Brendan Allen. So I don't have an issue with the outcome. Good showing for Brendan Allen. He's tall, he's long, he's very well-rounded. And so he was able to do so many different things to Chris Curtis. But again, props to Curtis because he was basically just boxing him the whole time and having success too. Like the same amount of success with just boxing versus Brendan Allen throwing everything at him and finding success. So a great main event, a great headliner, I mean. And like I said, Chris Curtis doesn't lose from this apart from having to recover from the injury. And Brendan Allen getting the win, that's obviously a step forward for him in the right direction.
I'd like to talk about that because he did throw a bucket of water. He wasn't interested in running, rebooking the fight with Vettori, which I also kind of get. I feel like after that one in this particular juncture, Marvin Vettori maybe feels a little bit too far down when you're kind of on an upswing, just with the time off and obviously coming off the loss. I think let's start talking seriously. Where is Jared Cannonier's return timetable? I believe he had shoulder surgery, elbow surgery, something to that effect. Is he on a timetable to meet Brendan? I think that could be a very interesting fight. I think it could be a very good fight. All right, that aside, they booked Rob Whittaker and Khamzat Chimaev. You got a couple guys out there, Paulo Costa, Sean Strickland. I think that those would be great fights, particularly Sean. I feel like in this moment, if the middleweight division is moving with Izzy and Rob and Khamzat, then Sean and Brendan actually makes a lot of sense to either create a new contender or get a Sean Strickland back in the picture. You know what I mean? So, in order of most important, most desirable to least, I would go Cannonier, Strickland, Costa for Brendan Allen. What about you?
Yeah, I like Cannonier. Strickland is a, you know, currently Brendan Allen's ranked sixth. So I don't know if winning, getting a win over 14th ranked Chris Curtis will move him at all. Of course, he was going to fight number five ranked Vettori. So you can't really punish him for accepting a short notice fight. But so I don't know what the rankings will, how they will react to his win over number 14th ranked Chris Curtis. So I like the Strickland matchup, but is Strickland too far ahead for Paul, for Brendan Allen? Does he deserve that yet? I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing it though. I like Cannonier better. What was your third option? Cannonier, Strickland, and
So, Cannonier, Strickland, Costa.
Costa. I like the Paulo Costa one. Yeah, that's a good one.
See, I think as a star, I get it. I think Costa would be good. I think it would be a big fight just with Paulo where he's at with the fan base right now. I just don't know that beating Costa really moves you forward either.
It yeah, it's ranked seventh, ranked below him,
And also,
yeah.
like, you know, you lose to, all right, so he lost to Vettori, he lost to Rockhold, he lost to Strickland, or not Strickland, Whittaker. And you got to talk about the layoffs in between these particular fights. I love Paolo. I love listening to him. I love watching him at Fight Week. I love his social media. I don't know that he's beating him does for you what beating Strickland would do for you in this moment,
Oh
or
yeah,
Cannoneer.
definitely
So
not.
yeah, so I get it, but I also feel like if you got to get your opportunity sometime. And I feel like with the middleweight division in particular, it's kind of, you know, we just saw with Poirier, kind of defend your spot. And I don't know that I need to see, you know, who else is in that middle of the pack. You know, Pfeiffer, Hermanson, Nazardine Imavov. I don't know that I need to see Brendan fight one of those guys. I think that of all of them, he's on the best win streak right now. Give him his shot at a Strickland or Cannoneer next.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense. I just think
You think he needs
it,
one more at least?
no, it's just I'm just thinking, I'm just trying to like do MMA math. You went the distance with Chris Curtis, ranked all the way down at 14. You almost lost to him. And is that performance good enough to get you a shot at Sean Strickland? I think it's good enough for Jared Cannonier and you know Paulo Costa, but he's ranked below him, and I actually agree with what you're saying. It doesn't really do much for Brendan Allen. I wouldn't accept that Paulo Costa fight if I were him. Cannonier seems more appropriate if you do the MMA math, but which fight do I actually want to see is him fight Strickland. That's just the more exciting fight. Would Strickland accept that matchup? I don't know.
I mean, gotta, hey, he's ready for a fight, no? But anyway,
He seems like the type who says yes to everybody, right? That's his persona, right? I'll fight
yeah.
anyone. So, yeah.
Good point. Look, we'll find out sooner rather than later. I think that right now, with a lot of these contenders jockeying for position, you're gonna wanna stay active, particularly, you know, you wanna line something up for the winner of Dracus and Adesanya, which we expect will be closer to the summer. So, you know, you kind of, if it's about getting a fight and getting paid, you know, it's early April. Let's say they fight in August, September. I mean, that's probably a good turnaround for a good fight, it depending on how bad you want it. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah.
yeah, if you're trying to get two or three in, you probably want that summer date. And we'll see. Look, obviously, once again, not the most stacked card. Guys got after it, and everything else. The other breaking news: Manel Kopp is out of his Fight Night main event on April 27th. Stepping in will be Alex Perez to take on Mateus Nicolau. So Perez, three fight skid. I think the biggest thing, you look at his topology, you look at his record, he's had a lot of cancellations. He's had a lot of bad luck since he lost that fight to Davison Figueiredo in, I believe it was 2020.
Yeah.
Mateus Nicolau, he was on a good win streak. However, his last fight was in April, lost to Brandon Royval, who's obviously at the top of the division right now as a contender. So this is a very critical one for these guys. I think one, huge opportunity for Perez, particularly, hey, if this fight stays together, this is a good moment for you to separate yourself from the pack, flyweight headliner, etc., etc. So it keeps the proverbial ball moving, so to speak. And then for Nicolau, obviously you don't waste a camp. Obviously, you know, you still get a win. You still create some parity. Remember, with Brandon Moreno taking a leave of absence, you know, taking a break, Royval's already lost to Pantoja. If Pantoja beats Usyk, this is still a huge moment for you to win a main event, you know, and move things along later in the year for a title shot. So I think it has higher stakes than it may look like on paper. So yeah, I think it's just a very important fight, even if it doesn't seem the sexiest with the names and the numbers and all that.
Yeah, not the most exciting MMA news of the week, but it's part of you know, it's part of the game and we need to talk about it. I'm
Hey,
chomping at the
don't
bit
say
here.
it's like, don't talk about it like it's going to the dentist now. It's still a
I know,
fist
man. I'm
fight. It's
just
our
like,
favorite thing.
I'm looking at our agenda and I'm like, UFC 300. But yes, okay. You're right. I appreciate that you always take the time to give attention to the big news, the medium news, and the not so medium news. And this is one of them. But it all matters because we have important people at the top that we want to, you know, see get challenged and see we need to have people coming up the line. And they need to put on good performances so we get excited when they fight for the belt. So this does matter. And, you know, we'll see what Alex Perez can do if he can, you know, take advantage of the opportunity
I
in
mean,
the
he's
face
got
of all
less
the
time than
setbacks.
Curtis did for this one.
Yeah. Hey, again, Michael Bisping, Luke Rockhold, right? You know, it happens.
Let's go. There we
Yeah.
go. All right. I think we've had a long enough of a warm-up, yeah?
Yes.
Let's get into it. The one is here. UFC 300. Man, I don't even, you know, like how they'll say it's like, like O'Malley versus Vera too. No, it's just 300. I don't know. You want to start talking fights, or do you want to talk like some of the other extracurriculars? Like, have you seen the poster? Or some fans would say lack thereof.
Yeah, the gold with just
Yes.
300. Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
You know, I'll tell you what. I used to work at A&E Networks, like on the digital side, and so we had to put pictures up, little tiny squares that you could see on iTunes, you know.
Yeah, pretty much a lot of thumbnails for
Yeah,
everything.
the thumbnails, right? And like I used to get so annoyed when the artwork was just the title because you couldn't fit all the images that you would put, you know, on a actual poster.
Right.
And so they would send us these little squares with just the title of the show. And I'm like, who's going to see that and get excited? That's kind of how I feel about this. If you watch the countdown or any other, you know, supplemental content, you've seen that mural, right? That got created
Yeah.
with all the fighters and it looks really freaking awesome. That's something that I don't know why it's not being used as the poster. But I guess I ask myself this, is it because they're trying to say this is about the company and not the fighters? It's, you know, it's bigger than any given name. Or is it because they didn't want to put Jamahal Hill and Alex Pereira on the cover of the UFC 300 poster because they are not big enough names? Maybe a little bit of both. I don't know. But there's plenty of material out there that they could have used to jazz up the poster. We've seen that out there, the creative. So it is weird, right? What do you think? Do you like the simplicity? Is that appeal to you?
Okay, as a concept online, and they're just like UFC 300, like bam. Like, objectively, oh man, just right there, like you get excited, and then it's like, oh, and imagine what the real poster is gonna look like.
Right.
And then you have someone like come in and like a cartoon whisper in your ear, like, pss, pss. It's like, wait, are you serious, bro? You know what I mean?
That
That's
is the
how I
real
felt about it.
poster.
I was like, as a concept, I was like, okay, yeah, like you said, all those other things, like the number, the brand, it's just, okay, I'll take it back. I like sometimes you want it less is more, like just like bam, 300, and just be like, it doesn't need more, right? I
Right.
can understand that as an idea.
As an
I
idea.
think though, like, because the UFC went all out with it, and like they do a thing, and it's like, oh, the poster in vertical, in landscape, social media size, the perfect square, not the rectangle, vertical. And
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, and they did the same thing, just the gold thing. There was no variation. That's when I was like, I don't know if that landed,
Yeah.
personally speaking. Now, look, once again, I get it, like I just said, and like you stated. I'm gonna assume the artist series is gonna blow the official out of the water. By the way, if you remember, I think it was Blachowicz and Teixeira, it was an Abu Dhabi card. The official poster was not that good, if I'm being honest, but the artist series one looked so sick. And like my friend even has that one over the official one because it was so much better. I'm gonna assume they are gonna go off with an artist series poster after having seen the fan reaction to that
Yeah,
official.
yeah.
I mean, I love all the promos. You've been to a UFC event as a fan, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you've been there early, like I am, because I like my money's worth. I believe it's at before the main card, if you're there in the arena live. By the way, they never televise this, which I think makes it more special because the fans who do get to go know. They do like a montage of UFC highlights to that whole song, the Who, Bob O'Reilly,
Oh
Teenage
yeah, on Teenage
Wasteland.
Wasteland, yeah.
Yeah, all that. They do like a montage, and they keep it pretty current. Like if 3 months later, there will if something really epic happens, it tends to make it onto the roll, right? And
Yeah.
of course, the concept is it gets you hyped up because anything could happen tonight as you're sitting in the stands. I love that they've kind of remixed it and they've done that a bit for, to one, it was used in that TV spot. Two, like all the promos have had it. They've had a few variations come out this weekend. I think that's been great. I think also it's a nod to the fans, like, wait, why that song? If you've gotten to go to an event live, you know why. And I think that's the perfect thing to acknowledge and celebrate before a thing like 300. So that is one home run that I think they're hitting. They've done a really great job of pitching the collective in the graphics. So, like, I think this is like one most former champions. I think most fighter, essentially most post-fight bonuses across, the card top to bottom. Obviously the individual accolades, like Jim Miller, winningest fighter ever,
Yeah.
the Hall of Fame for Holly against two-time gold medalist for Kayla. All of that has come together brilliantly. I think they've done a good job. Like, why is this the biggest? Oh, well, X, Y, Z. I think they've done great on that. I think that a lot of other promotions, if I'm being honest, sometimes can't just do that as much as they try. UFC, I think this has actually worked for them. And then, obviously, best foot forward. I've seen a lot of Gaethje in the media. I've seen a lot of Charles and Max. Perfect. Three of your most popular stars really carrying the media. I think it's great. So, in those ways, they've done really well. Is there anything else you'd like to shout out?
No, that's it. I mean, we talked about the poster and the actual design of the number 300. It seems sort of cool to me at first, but as I stare at it more and more, especially just looking at the UFC shop, it's like it kind of looks like the word moo, like MOO, just like the M is sideways. I mean, if you stare at something long enough, you see all kinds of things. So
So one thing, can I point something out?
yeah.
If you notice that earlier versions, the for want of a better word, the corners of the three, one of them used to, both of them used to be sharp. Now the bottom one is more rounded, and people have said, "Why do I see McDonald's now?"
Oh my gosh.
for the
Golden
record,
arches.
and anytime something is different, I like it to be acknowledged that it's different.
Yeah.
And so in that way, I do like that it's not just another UFC, and a three-digit number on the thing. I like that it's no, this is different. 300. You are acknowledging it is different from the others. I
Yeah.
like that. I personally like the old 300 thing, but that's just me. So I think all that worked for him. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I sharper lines. Makes it look cooler. We're in cage fighting, this is what I think they should lean into a bit. So
Yeah.
let's start from the bottom up. So
Okay.
I mean, hold on, I have to like respectfully, I almost get confused. Wait, which one is walking first? See, this to me is like I was like, we're starting with this one, but in my mind, I'm like, this is like co-main event. I know it's Hill and Pereira, but it's like, I know a ton of fans. This is like, no, like, when we get to this fight, it's just gonna be freaking bananas for the next 2 hours. Charles Oliveira, Armin Sarukian, lightweight fight. Sarukian coming off the first round knockout of Beneil Dariush. I think he's put three together since his very exciting main event against Mateusz Gamrot. The champion who has the name that you all know, Charles Oliveira, beat Beneil Dariush, bounced back, had a title shot, got cut, you know, physically, not, you know, from the roster. Was still expected to be first in line, gets added to this monster lineup, adds to the star power you want at a 300. Dana White and everybody has not have not committed to any sort of title shot or nothing, whether with this one or the next fight between Gaethje and Holloway that we'll talk about. Let's make it clear. If the next fight, by some way, just is a dud, I don't care how Armin or Charles win, they're getting the next shot at the belt. Very, very high implications, obviously, for Sarukian. Yeah. Having his moment to take out a star like Charles, to have that, you know, set up a potential rematch with Islam Makhachev, I think that would be big. For Charles, I love him. I know a ton of fans. They are ride or die. They love his story. They love how his journey has gone. I think he's leaned into it really well. I think that, you know, for a guy that a few years ago we were like, you know, maybe or maybe not, you know, whether or not it was going to happen for him. And now you got all these people riding, you know, they run with it when he's like, the champion has a name.
Yep.
But he lost to is no, the champion has a name. That's the kind of commitment he has from the fan base.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's great. High level MMA, high stakes, big names. Hit me with it, Natalie.
Yeah, man. Look, anytime you see Charles Oliveira in the cage, it's going to be a heck of a fight. He doesn't back down. He doesn't suffer stalemates. He's a killer. And like I said during the promo, or last week when we talked about the promo, when you see his face on the screen and that close up, those brows, those eyes, he's a scary dude despite fighting at, you know, a paltry 155 pounds. But he's a killer, man. We've seen it time and time again. He was the last dude I ever expected to go on the run he went on, beating all the dudes, submitting all the dudes in the top five to get that belt. And he did it. And I truly believe he can still do it again. Armin Sarukian is no joke, of course. He's a young, hungry lion. But I'm riding the Dustin Poirier, you know, veterans, the old man still got it wave. And look, Oliveira can shockingly hurt you on the feet with his hands. Like when he fought Gaethje, we thought he was going to be the one to get hurt, and he did, but he gave it right back and hurt more. And he did that with other of the top guys in the lightweight division. So let's not forget that he's got hands of stone. And then if you get on the ground, good luck. So I think Armin's got all the classic advantages of the young man, the young fighter that you would see on paper, but you've got a grizzled veteran who's hungrier than he's ever been, who's just got the dog, the killer inside of him, who has already won the title and wants it back. I believe in Charles Oliveira. I think he's going to get it done. Use his hands to get Sarukian down on the ground. Find a way to submit him in ice cold fashion. This is a three rounder, yes?
Yep.
Yeah, I think by round two, Charles Oliveira gets it done by submission.
I think the biggest thing, Charles Oliveira has to take the fight to Armin early. I think that compared to the fights where we've had the most exposure to Armin, the fact that this is a three rounder, on paper, you would think should favor a guy like that, younger lion, very fast. We've seen that already. He's proven that already. But I think that also favors the vet like Charles because, hey, you know, you don't have to worry about having that five-round gas tank. You could get after it a little bit. I think the key is going to be, you know, that forward pressure. You got to be able to effectively get close to Armin. I think that that's where you're going to make Armin hesitate a little bit because Armin is aware he doesn't want to end up on the mat with Charles. I think that he definitely knows that if there's one spot he doesn't want to be, it's working off of his back. By that token, probably a big part of the game plan is, short combinations, staying off the fence where Charles can really lock you in for the body lock. The Mord stays in the middle of the cage, most likely Armin. I think that it's going to be ironically all about the defense, despite their great, offensive capability. I think that if Charles can keep those openings low, he's probably got more weapons overall that should work to neutralize a guy like Sarukian. I think that Sarukian, even though I would argue he's probably a little more physical and explosive, I don't know that he wants to get into a straight firefight with Charles Oliveira. And in that way, I think that it's going to lean toward Charles also. I am feeling a little bit of that emotion too after watching Poirier. I know stylistically it feels like it should be right there for Armin, but you know what? I think the number one contender has a name, and it's Charles Oliveira, second
Oh
round.
yeah, I
Let's
like
go.
it.
Submission, by the way. You know what I think it does? Knocks him down, ties up the arm.
Yep.
Let's go. That's what I think we're
Okay.
going to see on Saturday.
Got it.
Anyway, we're going to
Woo.
move it right along. Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway. I might have spoken too soon because Justin Gaethje, I listened to him, he's acknowledged it, and I'm not going to lie, when I look at Islam Makhachev's career, he's beaten Charles, he's beaten Armin. The guy who's missing off of his resume in this moment, I'd say, is Gaethje. And I
Yeah.
know we're very likely going to get an announcement for Islam soon, is my prediction. That being said, you talk about, like lining him up 1, 2, 3 on the rankings. Gaethje is kind of like that missing piece of the puzzle. I think that Islam's on a great run. I think Gaethje is right there. And he's taken on a great Hawaiian legend in his own right, Max Holloway, moving up to lightweight for the second time. 2-fight win streak. Arguably toughest stylistic fight of his career just because of the physicality and just the capabilities. Dustin Poirier is great. I don't know that fighters go in expecting a ton of damage against a Poirier like they do against Gaethje. And that's what makes this, I think, such a challenge for a guy like Max. I don't know that Gaethje is going to be looking to have this nice technical boxing fight. I think Gaethje may want to rough it up a little bit. And when you talk about that X factor, how is Max's frame at 55 this time around? That's probably one of the biggest questions on the card, if we're being honest. So, a lot of questions. I know a lot of people love Max and ride with him. Gaethje, look, this might be the most popular he's ever been. And obviously, he's hit the fever pitch a few times. Current BMF champion. Everything to love about this fight from in terms of a star power type of deal. What are your thoughts?
I mean, truly excited about this, despite my displeasure at them UFC continuing this BMF nonsense, after post Masvidal Diaz. But okay, Justin Gaethje certainly fought like a BMF when he head kicked Dustin Poirier, and he always does fight that way. But he's a nice guy, and that's why I don't like the belt. But okay, again, moving on. This one makes me nervous because we know Max is obviously a legendary brawler killer at 145. We've seen how he looks moving up at 155 on, without prepping his body properly. He just was the smaller man against Poirier, but his chin was intact, maybe a little too good, right? Because he absorbed a lot of shots but never got put out. So we know he's got a good chin, even though he's older now with the proper training, preparation for his body. I think his chin is still there and still strong. But if there's anyone that can break a chin, it's Justin Gaethje. We've seen it time and time again. Michael Chandler is a great, more recent example of that. So I'm nervous for Holloway because I want to see him win. I want to see him have a moment of triumph at UFC 300, but I also want to see Gaethje win. Look, Max Holloway has rarely knocked anyone out with his fists, unlike Gaethje, who has done so. But Holloway is the volume guy. He can go and go and go. throw punches and take punches. He takes less punches now than he used to, right? He's more head movement, more footwork, a sharper boxer. And Gaethje also much improved since his UFC debut. We've seen that. Everybody knows that. He doesn't just stand there and eat a bunch of punches. So this is a tough one for me, because if Max Holloway had been fighting at 155 for even two fights prior to this, I would say, yeah, man, it's a pick 'em. But testing out his body at 155 against Justin Gaethje, that's a heck of a way to try out 155 again. Justin Gaethje's relentless. I don't think Max Holloway's punches are going to hurt Gaethje as far as, you know, hurting bombs. Over time, will the volume be enough to wear Justin Gaethje down? Is this a five-rounder, right?
It's five.
Yeah, five, man. Five rounds. So Gaethje can eat punches for five rounds. Now, think about the first two fights in the UFC for Gaethje. He ate a bunch of punches, and then eventually Alvarez and Poirier were able to finish him. But that's old Gaethje. He doesn't fight that way anymore. Someone coming up in weight who doesn't have the hurting bombs isn't going to be able to put Gaethje out, even if they go the distance, even if they're punching each other for 25 full minutes. That being said, Double G, I'm going to continue my wave here, cheering for the underdog. I'm going to say cheering for the old timer, even though Max is 3 years younger than Justin, because Max has been in the UFC longer. I'm going for Max Holloway. I'm not entirely sure how he's going to do it. And so I'm just going to pick Max Holloway by unanimous decision. It's sort of a cop out, because maybe he could finish Justin. Maybe he can't. I don't think so, but maybe he's going to be the smarter fighter. And this is mostly a heart pick, but I'm going Max Holloway, unanimous decision.
Is Charles Oliveira the underdog against Sarukian?
I think he is.
What?
I think he is.
I need to start listening. Hold on. -218. What the heck? I was listening to this like, I'm going to go with the underdog. And it's like, Natalie, is this another Habib and Justin situation again? Oh my gosh. No. Oh my gosh. So look, let's talk some X's and O's. I think the biggest thing is that Gaethje over the years has become a much more efficient engine of destruction. He's talked a lot about that loss to Charles Oliveira. We talked about it on the episode. I'm not going to harp on it, but that felt like a fight that Gaethje lost due to tactical errors rather than any other skill or ability that either man had in the cage. When I watch it back, and I remember thinking that life. Since then, what he's done to Fiziev, how he held on and got it done against Poirier.
Yeah.
He ain't the kind of guy that goes, you know, balls to the wall and just tries to bang with everybody. I think that that is a very difficult thing, because Max, how many of these fights, even the Cater fight, I feel like I saw, you know, more, you know, bruises on Max's face after a fight like that, where really he was hitting some unprecedented levels of, you know, just effective MMA. I think that that's what makes this fight dangerous. I think the kicks and the physicality, I think that I think that the biggest key is going to be the shot selection of Gaethje. I think that if you just try to get into this, you know, really technical fight in the middle of the octagon, you give Holloway the most opportunity to start making reads and all that. I think that he's just got to attack with a bit of everything. Maybe wrestle him a little bit. Definitely target those skinnier featherweight legs. All of these things should work. And I think just patience. I think that he has all the tools to beat a Max Holloway. It's just about actually executing them rather than doing something really inventive out there in the octagon in this particular matchup. Max has all of the ability and then some to pull it out, but from the jump, I've always felt like the best Max, sorry, the best Justin beats the best Max when you put
Yeah.
it all together. And in that way, I'm actually going with Gaethje. Sorry, Natalie, I'm sensing the third round will be where
Oh.
this one we hit the stop sign.
You think he's gonna knock him out cold
I
or
think at a
just.
certain point, maybe just that right combo, and he just kind of gets that a lot of unanswered shots in that the ref
Yeah.
says gotta pull the plug.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
I'm
think
not gonna
that's.
like seeing that, but it's definitely, like I said, mine's a heart pick, which usually means it's probably not gonna happen.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. Let's be
Yeah.
real. It's very much okay. Let's talk about the co-main event. I really like that these women are actually getting that shine. I think it says a lot. I think the only way this fight is bigger is if they really like boosted it in an event in China. Yan Shannon looking to take the belt from Zhang Weili. Weili, outside of Rose Namajunas, not only has won, she's just looked nothing short of fantastic. I mean, one best women's fight ever, but then two, one of the best, more importantly, one of the best fights ever with Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Outdid herself, stops Joanna, absolutely throttles Carla Esparza to reclaim the title.
Yeah.
Pretty much did one-way traffic with Amanda Lemos, and still on a good side age-wise. Ton of fights, ton of experience. I think she had, I did the stat for an article on Cageside Press. I want to say six or seven more fights than Shannon.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, makes look. She's the woman of the moment at strawweight. I've talked to other strawweights. They will tell you like. Rose beat her twice, but I'd still argue Zhang Weili is the best strawweight. I think that says a lot. For Yan Shannon, I think the biggest thing about this moment is seeing her compete, seeing her take on someone at Zhang Weili's level at this stage. So when I think about her recent fights and, split decision loss to Marina Rodriguez when Marina was on like 6-7 fight win streak right there for a title shot. Okay.
Yeah.
Then stops Jessica Andrade. Okay, all of these almost feel like, what is it? They all feel like anomalies because it's like the fights you think, would be more competitive, they end quicker. Fights that you think may be quicker, they've gone a little longer. I think that makes for an interesting moment for Shonan. I think that all things equal, it comes down to a bit more of the physicality and the athleticism because both of them are actually very similar. They're similar in height, similar in stature. Not just for the heck of it, I want to know, are they actually from a similar like close place in proximity in China? Just
Man, I don't
Mike
know.
Goldberg, virtually identical.
Virtually identical. Yeah, I mean they're both 34.
Yep.
Jan's 5'5" with a 63-inch reach. Weili is, drum roll please, 5'4" with a 63-inch reach. That's
See,
virtually identical as it gets.
I think the thing when you watch Wei Li, and look, I get it. She's also leaned into it. That athleticism. She's very powerful for a woman her size. Not just like pop on the punches. I mean, you watch those clips of her lifting up a Francis Ngannou. You
Yeah.
watch the physicality she brought to a Carla Esparza. Yan Shannon, look, let me be respectful to this woman. She hits the gym. She's a strong and capable athlete herself. I think that when you watch her fights, it tends to be a little bit more of a technical battle. Isn't really looking to put the pressure on in that way as much as, efficient and effective takedowns, smart moves on the feet. She's obviously grown a lot of her game being with that team over at Alpha Male in Sacramento. So all of those things really do matter. Zhang Weili is no slouch on any part of the game. I think if there's one place that both of them will probably look to take the fight, it's to the ground. I think that of both of them, Shonan showed she can knock out Jessica Andrade. Weili has great striking. I think the place you want to test both of them is off their back in jiu-jitsu. So I think both of them, the most efficient way to victory is probably the takedown. That being said, I really think they're just gonna throw down for probably about 20 minutes, either way it goes. You know what I mean?
I agree. I think they're gonna get in there and just, this is Ken and Ryu, right? They're
Yes.
virtually identical, right? Same styles, similar, and they're just gonna get after it. Similar build, everything. Whaley's fight nickname, according to Tapology anyway, is Magnum. Magnum. That's powerful. It's an imposing, intimidating. Yan Shonan's fight nickname is Nine, like the number nine.
Because
So,
she only needs 9 seconds to get the
duh.
dub, duh.
Look, that's not the worst fight nickname, but it definitely doesn't tell. It must be like a, you got to be in the know to know what that means. Any
I
case.
think she just runs it with nothing beats Andre Feely. I'm
Yeah,
sorry.
touchy man, I know. So, Magnum versus Nine, I'm going with Magnum, right? Yeah, we've seen her have tremendous victories against tremendous fighters. Yan Shonan has beat most recently Mackenzie Dern by decision, didn't finish her. Of course, that very, very impressive round one
Stop
against
of
Joshua
Andrage.
Andrade, right? Now, is Andrade on the downswing? Is that have more to do with it? I don't know. I'm not trying to take anything away. Andrade just looked good too. I can't remember who she last fought, but she looked good. That being said, Whaley's just had the tougher schedule, and she's been the champ, and been the champ for a reason. So, I think Yan Shonan has a lot to offer. Can beat a lot of tough fighters in the weight class. Weili Zhang to me is just still the better all-around fighter, faster, better, stronger. And I can see how Yan Shonan has improved with by being an alpha male. I mean, she's out there freaking grappling with Uriah Faber, and that's a look that you can't get everywhere. A guy like him with his experience. Being able to train on the mats with him, that's going to teach you a lot. So, no doubt she's ready for this fight. I think Whaley is just all around better. And so, Magnum is my pick. But it's going to be a war, man. I don't know. When you think about it on a like nationalistic level, China versus China, they're fighting probably for more than we can even imagine, wanting to go home the victor. In China, probably means more than going home as the victor in America. And so that's got to be something that, I factor that in any case. And so factoring that in makes me think it will be a drawn-out war. It's not going to finish fast because neither one's going to back down. And still, I pick Wei Li to win. I just am not sure how. Maybe round four TKO. That's where I'll draw my line.
I agree with you. I think that straight up, I just feel that Whaley does everything pretty much better. Maybe not quite the same, but think better on the feet, better grappler, more athletic, more explosive. Think can also have a great output cardio wise. And I think you put all those things together, I think that's a tough mountain, in particular for someone like Shonan. I think, like, for example, when you talk about someone with the power of like a Lemos or an Andrade, or let's say like great jiu-jitsu, like you have that weapon like a Mackenzie Dern, or the wrestling like a Tatiana Suarez, I think that creates a different problem. But I think Shonan's biggest thing is that she's very well-rounded. I think that if you know how like you do stats on like a video game, striking 5 stars, grappling 4 stars, this 5 stars, this and that. She's probably got overall like more even stats top to bottom. It's just that she doesn't have that one real signature dangerous weapon. And I think that with that, assuming you don't just catch her, which she very well can, you got to think in a five rounder, will you be able to do more things against Wei Li than will be done to you? And I think that's where a lot of people are leaning towards Wei Li. So I'm going with Wei Li too. I think it might be a little bit of a progression, but she'll get it done by the fourth round or in the fourth round. And I want to point something out. I asked Yan about this, and she told me, I know there are a lot of people saying, oh, China versus China. And she says, that's not even it to me. Like, have you ever watched diving? Chinese athletes take on Chinese athletes all the time. In the UFC, Brazilians take on Brazilians all the time. It's not like this huge thing.
Yeah,
Now,
but
mind you, I get it.
communist China, come on now.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna touch that today. It's been a long
Okay.
day, but my biggest thing is that I know to her personally, it's like I'm not, she's like I don't really lean into that too much. And I think, respectfully, for all of the, I'm gonna take the nationalistic because I know there's a lot of politics involved. There's a lot of countries with a lot of people just trying to live their lives and do their own thing, and who are in athletics where everything is equal, we compete on the even playing field. I think they know like the belt goes home either way, so that's just it. But yeah, I know Shonan in particular, she kind of downplayed that and it's like, no, this is just about me winning a belt, not even really about me versus Wei Li. So
Okay, all right.
it's like you don't watch my videos. So disappointed.
Oh man, sorry. I was
That needs a
what was I
moodio.
doing? I was watching the NCAA Women's Championship.
I am way, you know what? I was about to say something that I'm not. It's like I'm lying. I was just trying to say it to make a point. I am way more excited than Caitlin Clark. No, I'm not.
Well,
I just wanted to make a point.
you might have made more baskets than her today. I
Oh
don't know.
no, let me tell you something. That woman freaking, she had three fingers and one foot. She'd still freaking run circles around me. Not gonna ever disrespect her that way,
Of course not, man. Yeah.
There's only one fight to cap it off with. The main event, Alex Pereira, the light heavyweight champion, taking on the champion that didn't lose his belt in the cage, Jamahal Hill, Sweet Dreams. I'm gonna make this one short. Jamahal, when you watch that fight with Teixeira, his ability to switch stances, the physicality, the cardio, all of that came together beautifully. And it's because, two good knees, two good ankles, two good foots, right? If one of those is compromised, I do raise questions about his ability to reach that level out there against Pereira. If he can, this is a very dangerous fight for the champ. If he, is a little le bit less durable, taking those kicks and moving, if the cardio's off, if any of those little things, this just opens the door wider for arguably the most technically sound striker of the UFC champions. So, what does that say? I think that one, you acknowledge Hill was most likely going to fight in May anyway. He admitted he got paid a ton of money to say he'll come back in April. Rule number one, secure the bag. He felt ready, secured his bag. Not going to hate on it. Two, I think you really just got to talk about what game plan can Jamahal actually execute. If he's able to kind of move around a little more, if he's really mobile, I think that that really does open the door for him to have a lot of problems with Pereira, give Pereira a lot of problems. If it's a little slower approach, a little more patient, this is what Pereira historically has done all day. Take your time. He gave up time against Adesanya. I felt like he was starting to give up a little bit against Jiří, but picks his spot and destroys it. Watch what he did to Jiří Prochazka. Destroyed that calf. You gotta think he would love to do nothing more than attack that spot on Jamahal Hill. And he's one of the best at just you're coming in and just he makes you think about something else and bam, cracks it like an axe taking down the tree. All of those things are very relevant when you talk about Jamahal going in, Pereira going in. I think if Hill, he's able to avoid that, if he's able to, fight like he did against Glover, move around, switch it up a bit, give him a lot of different looks, a lot of things that make him harder to read, Pereira's pace tends to work against him. And if he doesn't catch you, a la the Adesanya fight, that's when you could, if you're Pereira, you could find yourself having to really make up a lot of ground. That's where people make mistakes. I think Hill would love for Pereira to be in that position. All of that depends. Can he execute that kind of game plan under the circumstances? To me, that's the number one question at UFC 300. What about you?
This is interesting. Jamal Hill, okay. Alex Pereira looks like a fighter, like physically, his physique, his tattoos, his facial expression, or actually expressionlessness. And Jamal Hill to me looks like a retired 90s R&B singer. Like, just doesn't look like the typical, prototypical mixed martial art fighter. And that's why he's been surprising me time and time again, because he's cool, he's chill, he'll put you in your place if he needs to, but he's not out there talking smack, talking head, unless you pick a fight with him, right? Unless you piss him off. But in the cage, he's able to get it done. We've seen it time and time and time again. And he always, like I said, is always surprising me with his performances, with his victories. But Alex Pereira is a killer. And I'm not saying Jamal Hill isn't, but if you just think about what the two fighters have done in the recent, last couple of years, right? Pereira coming in from kickboxing. How many fights in the UFC at this point has he had? Like six? I mean, coming in as a champion kickboxer, he beats Sean Strickland, he beats Israel Adesanya, gets the belt at 185, loses the belt, goes to 205, wins the belt. Is there any other fighter with as many fights in the UFC to have won a belt in two different divisions this fast or at all? Like, with
Well, no,
six.
he has the most amount of fights out of any two division champion.
Yeah. And so when you just look it on paper, it's Pereira all day for who's going to win. When you look at their pictures, when you look at their faces, it looks like Pereira all day too. And just from what I've seen of Jamal Hill, however, he's getting it done too, right? What did he do to Johnny Walker? Finished him in round one. Thiago Santos, that took a little longer, round four. Glover Teixeira, he beat him by decision, but it was a little bit of a clobbering, right? So
That was a stretch, yeah.
he's got the ability to finish you fast. He's got the ability to go the distance and keep pushing the pace. Then I asked myself, when's the last time Alex Pereira went the distance? Let's see.
Bruno Silva, no? No,
Jan Blachowicz, Jan
Blachowicz last
Blachowicz.
2 years ago.
Split
22.
decision.
No,
Split
23. It's last year.
23, July 23, split decision. Am I nitpicking, man? Am I over dissecting who went the distance, who got the unanimous decision? Yeah, a little bit. But it's because it is a tough one to pick for me. But that being said, with them both having these impressive track records and recent impressive victories, look, man, I'm going for Pereira. He's just been killing it harder and more impressively in a shorter amount of time. He's a killer. He's a dog. He's a fighter. He's a warrior. Like all the things. Poatan, man. He's my pick. Now, I don't know how that's going to go down. Because is Jamal Hill finishable fast? I don't know. UFC 300 with all that pressure, wanting to be the king of UFC 300, Jamal Hill has that chance. I don't know. I'm just going to throw a pick out here for Alex. I'm going to go round four. No, round three. Knockout of Jamahal Hill. Alex Pereira knockout of Jamahal Hill, round three.
I'll go with that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to point out, because I like to be a stickler about these things. So Pereira had like one line of merch, and he promoted it well on MMA Hour with Ariel, and it's like his face as the Easter Island head, but it's also got the tribal, like, you know,
oh yeah,
adornation.
Yeah,
I was like, bruh, home run on this merch,
dude. It's really cool. I almost thought about buying it, but I'm like, look, it's not cheap, right? The t-shirts. And he's not my favorite fighter. I have so many more that are my favorites, even though I don't dislike him.
If you had to get one fighter's shirt tomorrow, who would it be?
It would probably be that one, because it's the freaking coolest one.
Yeah. What happened to you? Have other fighters you like more?
Yeah, but you said if I had to get it tomorrow, so I'm just going off the current designs.
Oh, no, I thought you meant like one other fighter's shirt. Like, who would you pick over Pereira?
Oh, who would I? Oh, jeez. I'm just looking at their store here. they're kind of cheesy, man. That's the only one that's got like a proper design to it. Mm-hmm. The other ones are just like a picture of the fighter with like the name written cool.
Like we talked about the Sean O'Malley. He's figured out the merch.
A couple of the other guys. Yeah.
Faber used to have great merch. Let me tell you right now.
Okay.
I might still have them somewhere. You know, I can't wear them anymore. They're too worn out, but whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Pereira, I'm not going to lie. I like Charles Oliveira. Charles, depending on the place, that's my thing. I don't know. I like more creative merch. That's what I like about Pereira's. I'm not a fan of the big head merch. Not a fan of just maybe the name on it. That feels too basic merch. So I like too there basic, to be a little bit of a creativity to the merch. So that, you know. That's why I love Pereira's merch, but his new stuff doesn't have it. It's on his old stuff. But yeah, that's if Charles had sick designs, I'd probably get an Oliveira something.
Yeah. If Shevchenko had sick designs, I'd probably get something for her, but they don't have, it's just too basic.
Maybe not on UFC.com, other places.
No, I'd have to go looking for it,
I feel like Shevchenko should have some bomb merchandise.
Yeah.
We need to hire us. I wish I was good at digital art. I would make so much money on designs for fighter
shirts. I know,
shirts.
Right? Yeah.
Anyway, before we cap off the show, it's UFC 300. That is 15 good fights, if you ask me.
Wait, who's your pick? Are you picking Alex?
Yeah, when would Pereira too?
Third round. You go. Okay, third round too. Okay.
Yeah. That's 15 good fights. We could have probably done a whole hour on the undercard. I want to shout out, so look, there's a ton of great storylines. What are some things you like from the fights that we didn't discuss?
Yeah, two things I like, two storylines. Kayla Harrison, Holly Holm. And it's not just the Kayla Harrison aspect of it, but also Holly Holm getting a chance to fight at UFC 300. She's been a loyal, dedicated employee of the UFC, fighting whoever, whenever, whatever weight class, for whatever belt, and continuing to improve. You know, even if she's not getting faster, she's getting in better shape. And wouldn't it be awesome if she could win at UFC 300? A win over Kayla Harrison, even though it's her debut, would be almost an immediate catapult to title contention, right, at 135. On the other side, we got Kayla Harrison. Unlike Max Holloway, who's going up in weight, Kayla Harrison's going way, way down. This is the first time she's ever tried 135, whereas, you know, she's previously said she'd have to cut off both her legs to make 135.
Have you seen, like, clips of her recently?
I have not.
She looks so lean.
Yeah,
it's almost like she looks like Thursday night, Friday morning lean already. It's crazy.
Okay. Well, I mean, you kind of have to, right? You don't, if you want to be.
She can't cut that 15 pounds in the week.
Yeah, man,
your
brain would be.
She's got to taper it down over time.
Yeah, your brain would be a desert if you did that. And then there's no chance you have of winning. One head kick from Holly Holm, even this, you know, older version of Holly Holm would destroy you. So I want to see how Kayla Harrison looks, how she performs. Even if she doesn't win, if she looks good, if she puts on a good fight, that's a victory for her, a moral victory. So that storyline of those two women fighting at the UFC 300 is very exciting for me. That's the one I'm most excited about that we didn't cover, but one I'm also interested in, Jim Miller, you know, just the legacy of him, the doggedness, the longevity of his career, being at these seminal moments for the UFC, win or lose, you know, hopefully he wins, but Bobby Green's no joke. But if he doesn't win, actually, either way, does he retire? You know, is this the place where you want to do it, win or lose? I don't know, but I'm looking forward to that as well. What's your favorite storyline?
I'm with you on the Holly and Kayla. I think for Kayla, just because I've always felt like she is someone that you can build some showcase fights at 45 for. Like, you talk about the super fight division, like John Jones essentially is doing for UFC. Yeah. You could do something like that with Kayla at 45. So the fact that they're not, it kind of makes me feel like I want to see her kind of have that moment anyway. I admit, I think, you know, outside of Hill and the ankle, the foot, whether or not Kayla makes 35 is probably the other question looming over the whole card.
Yeah.
And look, the fact is, I want the Kayla Harrison we've gotten over the, you know, in 22. Just killed it on the mic, killed it in the cage. That fighter, I think, exists at 45 and above. I don't know that, you know, I don't want you to be that depleted at 35, but that's the realm we're in right now. So in that way, I kind of, you know, stick it to the system kind of deal.
Yeah.
That being said, you know, look, like you said, it's Holly Holm. If there's a vet who can exploit things like that, it's someone like her who's been around, seen it all, done it all. So that's the big one. You know what? People aren't talking about them enough. I think Jiří and Rakic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Rakic, I think the thing I like about him, he had absolute snoozer against Thiago Santos, came back and was taking it to Jan Blachowicz. I think people forget how good he looked. He looked on his way to announcing himself as a contender. Badly hurts his knee, unfortunately, has been out more than a year. But yeah, I think about him, he obviously, you know, you talk about these guys, Jan, Jiří, so many of guys, you know, Jamal, Alex, so many of these guys have had their moment, and he kind of missed the boat a little bit. I think that this moment at 300 is big for him. And then for Jiří, I love watching him. I know a ton of people do. The possibility of him getting back into title contention would be huge. Look, if Jamal Hill wins, Hill and Jiří, the storyline is still right there. You got to think, could the hype of winning this one for either man propel them past, say, Magomed Ankalaev, who's on a good run? And then stylistically, I think about the Jiří we saw, the Rakic we saw, could still be a fun banger at 205. And it's on the prelims. I think there's a lot of things to be happy about. So, yeah, and then obviously, look, I mean, Sadiq Youssef, Diego Lopez, they're going to scrap. Cody Figueroa, going to scrap.
Going to scrap, bro.
You know, there's a few of those fights. Bo Nickel doing Bo Nickel things. So there's a lot of talent and a lot of people that the UFC's hyped up being showcased, and I like it in that way. As a collection, it's a great card. I get it, and I'm not going to talk about it next week. We, you know, could it have had a Conor or a Adesanya? Yeah, yeah, sure.
It doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly. Whatever. That's how I feel about it, too. Like, bro, I'm over it. This is a great set of fights. Let's enjoy it now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, Natalie, any other thoughts before we go into the week?
No, I love the way you said that. Great set of fights. Let's enjoy it. That's it, man.
Well, guys, I'd like to shameless plug. I will be in town all week. PFL UFC 300. Stay tuned to my stuff at Double G on TV. Watch the full-length videos at Cageside Press on YouTube, on Instagram, on just about every major social media platform. Go to my profile at Double G on TV. There is merchandise. You can order cards from my friends over at Midwest Cards. Follow the link in my bio to support. Yeah, so definitely enjoy it and follow me I'll have everything there on location. You're not gonna want to miss it. Natalie and I will be back to break down the results. Till then, have a good one.